I thought it was cold where I'm at. Mm. And then David sent a screenshot of his phone saying that it was -5 degrees.
Whoa.
On an iPhone, you wake up and it'll say good morning on there. And then it gives you the weather report. And it says good morning, -5 degrees. I'm like, what's so good about that? Yeah. Then I gotta share this bad news with my podcast mates.
I have this this weather app called Carrot, and it's just one I've downloaded at one point. But the app itself, there's a setting where you can tell it like basically how sassy you want the app to be, and so it will. I've got it turned all the way down because it's kind of obnoxious. But it has these little quotes at the top that will like kind of make fun of you, and it's like, oh yay, it's snowing, like time to power down, or all these types of things. But if you set the snark all the way up, it's pretty adult. It's pretty funny. You might want to check it out because it is kind of funny.
There's your recommendation.
Yeah, but I it's only 5 degrees for me, so I got like, it's like a balmy single digit on the high side of zero for
negative me. -3 when I went to bed last night. -3.
Man.
It's, not enough it's degrees.
It's about 3 or 4 now, which is unbelievable.
The other day, we have some work going on in the backyard. And Monday morning, these guys told me they were going to be there to start breaking up some concrete. And they're like, we'll be there, and we're going to be there every day next week. Didn't say anything about the temperature, right? So they showed up Monday morning. It was 3 degrees outside. And they worked a full 8, maybe 9 hour day jackhammering outside. And it was like 6 guys, and they just took turns. You know, like somebody would stand over by the Bobcat and like by the heater, by the engine, and then the other guys would be running the jackhammer, and then they would swap. And man, they put in a full day. And then they called me yesterday morning, and they were like, I told my guys not to come in today because it's a little much. I'm like, yeah, that's probably smart. So they're coming back on Friday, but I wouldn't want to be out there. I was standing in my kitchen, you know, in my cozy pajama pants, drinking coffee, waving at them from the window. And I'm like, hey, guys. Mm.
It was so cold yesterday when I breathed in, it hurt my... I felt like my whole entire esophagus was freezing.
Mm.
When I inhaled, I thought to myself, I have this weird curiosity about Mount Everest and the people that climb it. I follow a couple of channels that show people on Mount Everest. And I just think to myself, it's almost intriguing to me. Like, why would anybody do it? It's like watching guys in those squirrel suits that fly. Like, why in the world would anybody do this? And it's just a morbid curiosity. And yesterday, when I was breathing and feeling my condensation freezing as it went down my throat, I was like, whoa, it's hard to breathe because it's so cold. It hasn't been this cold up here in memory in a long time. I guess it does get this cold every winter, although every time it happens, like, feel like it's the first time I've experienced sub-zero weather. The house is warm, thankfully, because there's no wind. When there's wind and it's cold, forget it. I'm bundled up under the covers with all the heaters on, and I'm still not warm enough because the wind just sucks whatever heat directly out of the house. But I was surprised to wake up and realize it was about zero this morning because the house was comfortable because there was no wind.
This is probably the longest we've had this type of temperature. And we've had snow on the ground for like 2 weeks. And for us, that's just crazy. That never, ever happens.
Yeah. So it's snowing in Florida. It's snowing in Pensacola. This accumulation of like 5 or 7 inches on the ground.
Pretty wild.
It's crazy. The snow in New Orleans.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I saw some pictures of Bourbon Street covered in snow. Like, what?
Snowing on the palm trees.
Yeah. Very strange. Well, so we talked before this just a little bit, and you were, I don't know if you were joking or not, but you said, you know, we could talk about how the weather like this kind of unseasonable weather, how it affects your making, how it affects your time in the shop. And I know for you, probably more than me, you have to walk several feet to get to your shop. Mm-hmm. That probably affects something, but it's also just a different type of building.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all of your different shops are different types of, like, you know, mine is a heated basement. It's easy for me to
not be cold. The barn that we shot the TV show in is heated better than anything. So I spend most of my time in there. For instance, I did some Instagram stories and, well, I did more Patreon stories last night about me working on that Cadillac that I'm working on. I'll talk a little bit about it. I was sweating. I I kept taking my hat off, and because I was literally dripping sweat working on that car in that shop. And I thought to myself, I should turn the heat down. I was like, no, I need this heat, because I turn it down. I don't want to mess with the boiler. The boiler's been a little finicky. When something works that has computer controlled and internet connectivity, I don't touch it. I don't turn it up. I don't turn it down. I just say,
there's the Jimmy I know.
I do not touch it. So I was going to open the app and turn down the Viessmann boiler. And I was like, I'm not touching it. Because that's the one that I showed a couple weeks ago that was off. And then I tapped it with a screwdriver in 5 key places. And then it turned back on. $6,000 boiler. Mm-hmm. Works with the screwdriver. But the handle of the screwdriver, not the screwdriver. That is the warmest building in my environment. So I do spend a lot of time out there. When it's super windy, I figure out any reason to be out there because the house is cold.
When we stayed at the Frank Lloyd Wright house a few weeks ago, it was built with heated floors in the concrete, and only part of it works now, but the part that worked was so nice walking around in your socks, and the concrete is warm. If I ever have to rebuild my shop, I want to do the heated floor thing. It was so nice.
My big shop has the heated floors, and like laying under the car and laying under the Cadillac and getting down on my knees, it's hotter there than it is when you're standing, and you feel it's so comfortable. And you come in with wet shoes, and there's a big pile of snow at the door. A half hour, it's all gone.
This is probably a dumb question. Mm-hmm. I know it's a dumb question, but I'm going to ask anyway. Are those types of embedded, because it's tubing that flows liquid through the floor, right? That's how it. Okay. So are those used to draw heat out of a room ever?
You mean as in cooling?
Yeah. Could you use it to cool like the ambient? I don't know.
That's a good question. I mean, that's how air conditioners work. But I would imagine the heat is up in the air versus being close to the floor because of the heat rise. True. But yeah, there's. I think there are aluminum, plastic coated aluminum tubes that I think I saw go on my floor. And it's also in the horse barn. But it's not connected yet. I got all the equipment to connect it, but it's not connected yet. I'm having guys smarter than me do it. So I will have heated floors in the horse barn as well. And it's really, I think the heated floor in the horse barn is enough to heat the whole building, and the building's really well insulated at the moment. So once the heat downstairs is kicked on, it's going to be enough to heat the upstairs and everything at the same time.
Do you think once the horse barn has like the full living accommodations, like you were talking about it, having everything, do you think you'll end up sleeping out there sometimes because it will be better than sleeping in your house?
Oh yeah, for sure. 100%, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, because it's a smaller place to heat. It's even smaller than the other barn, so I think the heat will be a little bit more potent, more comfortable, I think.
And it's going to have like a kitchenette type thing in it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were just talking with Patrick yesterday about where and how I'm going to do that. It was all designed to have that. It was going to basically be a standalone house from the beginning. I messed up when I took over the project completely solo, and I didn't have privy to look at the plans, and because they weren't available to me, and because it wasn't my project. So I'm kind of talking in code. But when I took over the project, I didn't have the plans, and I just hired an architect to go. I said, just draw the rest of this place. A friend of mine who's an architect, and I paid him well, and he's a really accomplished guy. I said, just draw this place and draw it. And he didn't have any previous knowledge of the project either. So I looked at it and go, oh, these are perfect. So that was the plans we used to finish it. And we put a window right where there's supposed to be a wall based on the plumbing. Oh. So there's a window directly. I should have noticed it, and he should have noticed it. We were both just... So there was supposed to be two windows on either side of a wall. Instead, there's one big one right in the middle of where there's going to be a wall. So I might black that window out, just put a black cardboard on it and put the wall up with a little bit of air space between it. So that wall, the reason why I can't move that wall is because all the plumbing accessories are right in the, come popping out of the concrete right there. So I might make a knee wall or like a wall with like a little notch in it so the window could be worked on both sides. I'm going to get creative.
I mean, you could theoretically fill that. You could take out the window and fill that hole, right?
Yeah, I could. But I should have did that before the siding guys came.
Yeah.
And before I put a $500 window in its place.
Yeah. There's that.
I could get more creative inside. You know, it's fun when you work alone. You can be really creative and just no one to call you on your bad ideas.
Or help you not miss things like windows and walls.
Yes. Yeah.
But, so you've been working on the car, you said.
Yeah, this week I'm working on the car. I did a video last week, and I'll use this as an example later on when we talk about our concept. I did the basement door, which for a minute I thought would be a video that I did already. But I said, let me iterate. Let me do the same thing again, but try and improve my steps. Like I say all the time, you always go to school on the first one. And I really did. I made a door very similar to the first door that I made in the house that I live in. This door that I made was for the house that I'm repairing down the block. And I made some small but big improvements, small but big in the way that even from like my work, I remember doing the first door and compromising on some of these things because I was pressed for time and I said it on Instagram. I made this door latch like this because I didn't have time. And then I look back at it now and I almost want to replace it and make it over now that I have better knowledge. And going into the door that I made last week, I researched a little bit, came up with a better idea for a door latch. Same concept, but better executed. And so that was a successful video in the way that I expected people to be like, not this again. There was one comment that said this again. But for the most part, people were impressed to see the same thing done again, but with some improvements. So there's a lesson learned there. Even after all these years, you could do the same thing twice and people will still find something in it, including me. I mean, I think that's really why people find something, because I found something in it. I learned some improvements in my work.
I found that as well in the last year or so, doing a second version of things, which is something I always thought would be bad.
Yeah.
Actually, turned out better than, I mean, from a viewership perspective, turned out better than the first one, which is surprising.
Yeah. So I did that. And then this week, I'm not sure if I'm going to, I might try and squeeze a video in this week just to put things in a time perspective. That door project that I published last Saturday, I didn't start until Thursday morning. So we did the podcast. I was kind of, it was a vague idea when we did the podcast. I started it Thursday morning. I was installing it Saturday morning.
Wow.
So now that I know I could do a fast project like that, I mean, it's getting tighter and tighter, my schedule. I think I might do a video for Saturday. I have an idea for a leather video. So I might do the leather. It's a piece of furniture. I might do the leather video this weekend. It's involves blacksmithing and leather work. But it's so cold out. I'm going to have to blacksmith when it's 2 degrees out. Every time I get inspired to blacksmith, it's so cold out. It makes it difficult to blacksmith because of the... But I could bring a forge inside. I think that's what I'll do. I just answered a question. I'm going to bring a forge into. Yeah, I'm going to do it in the kitchen.
Cool.
No, I could work inside the barn, the TV show barn. Yeah, I could do that. It's actually would be better because when you're blacksmithing in the cold, you lose a lot of heat, and of course, makes everything. You have to move quicker. Yeah. So anyway, I might do that. I might do a piece of furniture. We're working on the caddy in between. And I have this 1947 Cadillac that I got on Facebook Market. It was a hearse or an ambulance. Nobody really knows the story. The guy I bought it from, he bought several cars in an auction bid, and this car was one of them. And he said, I don't know anything about it. I pulled it to my place, and then I never touched it. And he put it on Facebook Market. So he doesn't know the history. He doesn't know where it came from. Some car collector had it, and he's a car collector. So it was just one of those things nobody even remembers or knows the history of it. But there is no back on it. It's cut off right from the back, right where the back window of like a pickup truck, like a single cab pickup truck would be. The whole back of the car is cut completely off, and it's just the frame. And the nose from where the door handle opens the door all the way to the front, it's the nose of a 1947 Cadillac that really should belong in a junkyard. It's one of those things where I'm looking at it, me and Rob, I'm like, oh, wait, there's no radiator. Okay, there's no starter. Oh, there's no oil filter. Oh, you know what? There's no master cylinder. Oh, wait, there's no, you know, I'm looking at it and all these parts are missing. But the one thing that's there is the engine block that's fully assembled and the carburetor. And I figured that's enough to get started, so... we're fiddling with it. We keep breaking it down further and further. So now the entire head is open. And yesterday I said, I'm going to tackle this stuck valve. We've had a stuck valve on the thing. Everything was frozen solid. I took an oxyacetylene torch, which will ultimately be in the video. Heated the whole block up when we got the car at the end of the summer. and after fiddling and playing with it, was able to free the block up. And this is interesting. This is something I learned from an old farmer up here, because I had, when I first bought this house, there was a tractor here, and the tractor was frozen. And he said, jack it up, put it in second gear, and shake the rear tires, and it'll get the engine loose. So if your engine's frozen, you have the ability to turn the tires, you'll be able to unfreeze the engine by keeping it in gear and shaking these big giant tractor tires.
Huh.
And that didn't work at the time, only because I just had limited means. I didn't have all the equipment I have now. That was 20 years ago. But using that same idea, I jacked the, well, I didn't have to jack up, but I was able to connect a big giant monkey wrench to the drive shaft of this car. And since the rear drive shaft wasn't connected to the rear axle, I didn't have to lift up the back of the car. So that's another thing it needs. It needs a part of the drive shaft. I was able to heat the block up and shake this connection to the drive shaft, which is fully exposed in the back. And eventually the engine started turning. And I was doing it alone, so I had to set up a camera and shake it and then watch back the camera and say, oh, okay, the pistons are moving for the first time in 50 years. So that was how I, that was one of the first things we did on the car, is free it up. And then yesterday I freed up this valve by removing it out of the car. It was a job. It was a job for somebody that's never done it before. And it was on my Patreon, and I was successful at putting it all back together. And now it's the one valve in the car that moves the most freely. But today what I'll probably do is connect the starter so that I can then charge the starter and just exercise the motor and get all the moving parts going, and we'll flush the oil out and all that fun stuff. So this is a huge learning experience for me. I played with cars before, but I always avoided playing with the engines just because it's so many things to screw up, and yeah. I just don't have enough experience. But with a shop manual and YouTube, I think I could get it all together. Yeah.
Cool. That's pretty exciting. Yeah, that's something new to learn. That's cool.
Yeah, just to bring this, it should have belonged in a junkyard. That's where it should be. It's probably where it would have gone if this guy didn't sell it. But the idea of bringing a car back like this from absolutely dead is exciting. And Rob's very excited. So last night I bought a bunch of parts online. I bought all the gaskets and several other parts. And yeah, so it's moving along.
Awesome. David, you've been doing anything, or are you just staying inside and warm?
It's only a 20, 30 foot walk from the house to the shop. So... there's no real reason that I shouldn't go out there.
Mine's 250.
Yeah. How many steps is it?
I don't know, but I measured it once because I was talking to somebody about the internet, trying to like project the internet over there or something.
Yeah. So I believe there's two videos that we're working on. I believe the next one, it's a race to see which one gets done first. But I believe the next one is... it's an art piece. We went to the Goodwill to find something to transform, and we found some kitchenware stuff that we ended up, I say we, it's just me, but my brother was there filming the whole thing, and turning it into this wall sculpture thing. I don't want to give it away too much, but it came out really good, really happy with it. I've done so many of these like thrift store, antique store projects where I just go in and try to find something. And half the time I like the project, half the time I don't like the project. And it either ends up back at the Goodwill, or I give it away, or it goes into the fire pit. And this is one of the ones that I do like. And what I've learned is I need to have a list of potential projects that I can do when I walk in. Because when I go, like the antique mall here is just, it's huge. And I just want to spend the whole day there. And when I don't have any clue on what I want to make, I'm like, I'm just going to let something inspire me. It's too overwhelming. There's too many things and I don't come up with a good idea. I buy a bunch of junk that just sits on a shelf and ends up back in the donation bin. And so this time I made a list of potential things. I brainstormed the night before of like, oh, I could do this if I can find, you know, the thing that I didn't do, but one of the things that was potentially I could have done was like a bunch of t-shirts with letters on them and do like the ransom font where I cut all the letters out, make a phrase on a board, pour epoxy over that, frame it, blah, blah, blah. And so I had a bunch of those types of things in the can or in the potential bucket. And but going in there with an open mind. So if something changes my mind, to go with that. And I found some dishware, and I was like, oh, this wasn't on the list, and I'm going to let this dictate what I do. So, and that's what I did.
Cool. Interesting.
There's most of my videos have some sort of deadline, or there's a sponsor tied to it. And so going, starting a project, not knowing what you're going to make and how long it's going to make, is kind of, there's a lot of pressure on there. But as soon as I got these, I'm like, oh yeah, we got this. I know exactly what I need to do. This is only going to take a few days, and here we are.
Cool. That's exciting.
Yeah.
I had this idea that I've been working on kind of in the back of my mind, but I hadn't actually figured out how to do it for a month or two now. And if you're watching the video, excuse me, if you're watching the video, you'll notice that my camera is lower than it usually is. That's because the idea was a way to take the webcam that's usually on top of my monitor, so it puts it above my eye line, make a mount for it so that I could put it up there, or I could pick it up and put it in front of my screen and actually slide it up and down and place where I wanted it to be vertically. And there are some little cameras that you can buy, webcams that you can buy, that are really tiny and have a little arm on them or have a suction cup on them, ways to put them on the screen so that you're looking straight ahead, kind of eye line with the camera. But I like the camera I have. I didn't really want to buy one of those. And those little tiny cameras, like, don't look great and are really expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Like $150 for this tiny little... Anyway. So I spent... I started on it probably Thursday or something. Today is Wednesday. And in that time, probably did 5 very different iterations of... You know, my first idea was like, oh, yeah, this one's totally going to work. And then I got into it. I'm like, nope. It doesn't work at all. And so it ended up being one of those problem solving videos where, you know, I broke it down to here's the plan. We do the plan. It doesn't work. And I start solving the individual problems. And it was cool because I did several versions that were very different. Each one solved this thing. And then this one solved this thing. And then this one solved this thing. But they all had their own problems. In the final version, I was able to take the solves from the previous really different ideas and put them all together into one thing that, like, it works great. And it's simpler to put together. It's easier to print. It works with any webcam. And so I'm really happy with how it turned out, but also just the fact that I had a very specific, I want the camera at eye line, like eye level right there. And being able to get that done and at the same time pick it up and just drop it behind the monitor, it's out of the way. You know, it did everything that I wanted it to do. So that's pretty exciting.
It's a pretty clever mechanism. It's funny how if I was going to make the camera where I wanted it to be right in the middle of the screen, the mechanism to make it go right there, I would have done completely different. And then I see yours, I'm like, ah, that's freaking brilliant.
Well, I did it pretty different in the beginning and they didn't work very well. So yeah. I had one idea this was like the original idea, and I think we even talked about it on here. No, I had this idea while we were talking about something else. I remember that now. And it was just a piece of fabric. So it would make sense that if you have a camera that you want to be able to adjust in the front of a screen, that you mount it on something flexible that could go up and then hang over the top, that would kind of drape over.
Like a ribbon?
Maybe have some sort of like a ribbon. You have a clasp up there that can hold it. And so in the back of my mind, since the very beginning, I was like, yeah, it's probably going to end up just being a piece of fabric. And maybe I'll have to like find a reason to 3D print stuff onto fabric so that I have a little way to hook it or, you know. And that was about as specific as I got. And so then at the beginning of this video, I said, oh, I've narrowed down to these two ideas. One is fabric and one is not. And we're going to try the not fabric one first, but I'll probably end up going with fabric. And so I did the first iteration of this non-fabric version and found a major problem. that would have been amplified if it were made out of fabric. So it was kind of interesting that my first version, like, really just wiped the slate clean. I'm like, okay, none of my ideas are good, so we're going to have to do something very different. But it's funny because the whole time I had been in the back of my mind kind of committed to, like, yeah, that's probably the simplest way to do it, you know, and it just doesn't work because the weight of the camera cantilevered off the front of the monitor just wants to fall forward, and you have to counteract that within the mechanism, and you can't do that with fabric and whatever. It was fun. I really like... I like that kind of finding something failed and then thinking about the mechanics or the physics of it and like, why did this fail? Why doesn't this work? Oh, because there's a hinge point here, or because there's a cantilever. And so how do I counteract that? And that kind of incremental, I'm going to solve this little thing and that presents new problems. Solve those, that presents new problems. I really like that. So got to do another one of those. And, you know, while I've been waiting on prints, I've also been trying to get the studio room set up for shooting the course. I was hoping to be a week into shooting at this point, but we've been trying to figure out the best audio scenario and just, you know, like nitpicky, trying to do it really well. And so made a bunch of adjustments to audio and
what are you capture. Are you going to go with DJI mics, or has you got some other solution?
Well, normally in the videos, I use the little DJI mics with the lav, and that's what we did. It was a different lav mic, but that's what I did in the first two courses.
You plug into the transmitter?
No, it's wireless. And one of the problems,
do you plug in like a little tiny mic with a wire, yeah, and then you keep it in the pocket or something?
Yeah, the lav I tape underneath my shirt, like right on my sternum.
Oh, right, like a real camera production.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way I do it for all the normal videos. But I've had problems recently with the DJI receiver just turning itself off randomly. And it's not a power thing, but it just, sometimes it will just be off and I'll lose takes because there's no audio and stuff. And also, you know, the battery life is a concern when you're sitting down at a desk and you're talking for several hours to try to get all these takes and stuff for this course. There's a lot of footage. So we're trying to minimize things that will cause it to be a hurdle, you know, anything that will slow down the process. So we try to get all of the lights preset in locations, marked on the floor, you know, the desk and the set and everything is just there. So I ended up trying, I have microphones like this one that I don't know if you can see it, but you know, it's an XLR podcast microphone. It's just a good microphone. And so I took my audio interface in there and tried to set that up on a boom, but then you could see it and it didn't fit the thing. And I had a shotgun and we tried that, but it sounded too roomy. So I ended up trying a bunch of different placements with the mic. Anyway, I ended up finding a shotgun mic on Amazon, which is some brand I'd never heard of. The cool thing about it was it's wireless or wired. So it has the little receiver pack like the DJI mics. So you can put that on the camera, put it in direct, and then put the shotgun mic anywhere. It can be on a boom. It can be, you could hand hold it, I guess, or whatever. But if you don't want the wireless thing, you can run direct out of the shotgun into the camera. And so I figured that would be more flexible for future use in different scenarios. I have either one of those options. So right now we've settled on, I've got that on a boom right out of frame in front of me, like pointed at my throat, at my chest, kind of. We've played with a bunch of different placements there and gain values and all this. You know, I'm like kind of at a point now where I'm like, okay, I just need to start shooting the thing because we're having diminishing returns on the setup. And so hopefully today, maybe tomorrow, we're going to get in and shoot the first few lessons and then go back and like double check everything, make sure it's all good. But I'm really anxious to get the course going. And also, I mentioned last week that I was doing this, and I had several people buy the course and send me messages saying, thank you for telling us that you're updating it. I'm going to go ahead and buy it and get that out of the way. And I thought that was really cool. So thank you for those notes and for, you know, kind of investing in what we're doing to those people. I appreciate it.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So one more thing before we get into our topic, unless you have more to say.
No. Nope.
For the other video that I'm working on, I'm not going to reveal it just yet. I had this thing that I made, and it would have been really easy to cut out on the laser, but I'm like, it's not as interesting. I want to do it on the scroll saw. And the scroll saw that I had up until a few months ago was this Proxon scroll saw, and something was wrong with it. It was terrible. I don't think the arm went up and down, and it was really hard to use. It was loud. It vibrated. I just assumed all scroll saws were like that. So I got rid of it, and I'm like, this project, I really want to do a scroll saw. So I started researching scroll saws. I'm like, the DeWalt, there's, the Excalibur. That's a lot of money for a tool that I only use a few times a year. What does Harbor Freight have? And there's this newer Harbor Freight Bauer scroll saw, mm-hmm. and it's big. It's got like a 22 inch throat on there. It is a dream. It is.
Oh, really?
It might be my favorite Harbor Freight tool now. It's big and it's heavy. So it's 75 pounds. It's really quiet. There's the table is so slick and it's huge, and it's just a dream to use. And I haven't done too many projects with the scroll saw, so I'm not very good, but watched a couple of videos. I got some good blades for what I needed. And it was meditative, because I'm working on this big piece, and it's a couple hours of cutting. I'm like, this thing is a dream. So not sponsored, hashtag not sponsored, but the newer Harbor Freight Bauer scroll saw is nice. Really nice.
That's cool. Wow.
Cool. Well, I have zero desire to get a scroll saw, so I probably won't check it out. But I'll it's interesting because. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I remember years ago, you're like, I just hate jigsaws. They're a pain to use, and I never get clean cuts. And that was kind of like my issue with the scroll saws that I had. Just I had secondhand ones. Something wasn't calibrated right, or something was bent or not working. And I'm like, these tools are just not for me. And my mind has changed.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I that would probably be the case. It's funny. I'm at a point now where I know you said like it would be better for you to use a scroll saw than a laser, but for me, I'm at a point where I'm like, it would take me seconds to use the laser, and I could be eating a snack at the same time. Like, I'm totally going to do that rather than getting out the scroll saw and doing the thing. I don't totally understand why, but it's just, I guess I'm getting lazy. I don't know.
The one issue I have is it's from front to back is bigger than any of my other tools. So it sticks out of the workbench that it's on, and it would be in the way of my joiner. So I have to turn it sideways when not in use, which means I have to move another tool. I just don't have room for new tools. And I don't know. I think I need to rearrange or figure out a new setup in the shop so everything has its place.
When I rearranged stuff, earlier in the year, last year, whenever that was, I took several of my woodworking tools that I don't use very often, and I gave them to my sister, who is a woodworker now, and she's like doing some really awesome stuff. We've talked about that. But it's helped her out a lot to have, a joiner, and she, like, my lathe is over there and some other stuff. And those are things that I chose to give her because I knew that I didn't use them very often. And so it's not like I really miss them. And I can go over and still use them if I really need them to. But making the choice to take tools out of my shop was awesome. And I was a little bit hesitant about that at first because we accumulate, we're accumulating possibility every time we buy these tools. And we now I can do all of the things anytime I want. And I remember thinking when I moved into this house, I want my shop to be the thing that provides me every opportunity to make anything I want, no matter what it is. I want to have capability and at least a dangerous enough skill at it to be able to do anything. Jump forward 5 or 6 years later and I'm like, man, I would like some space. So I want to get rid of this stuff because if I can't use a you know, if I don't have a lathe to use, I'll figure out something else. But I would rather have the space, and instead of stacked up tools up against a wall filling a corner because I have them just in case, you know.
You coming at me?
No, because if I had the opportunity to just build another building to put those things in, I would, but I don't, so I can't do that.
I'm feeling guilty.
A couple of months.
No, you shouldn't feel guilty. I think that's really cool that you have the opportunity to keep all of those potential opportunities, and you have the space to be able to create, you know, places to put them where they're not crowded. They're not, you don't have to, like, I got to move these three tools to get to that one to pull the thing out. And then, you know, that's great.
A little bit
jealous of that space, but at the same time, I'm blessed with a huge amount of space relative to a lot of people's shops. So, you know.
A couple of months ago, the theme of the video that I made was collecting potential. I collect a lot of potential. So if you open up the closet doors, you just see all kinds of wood scraps and pieces of wood and various things that I've gotten from antique stores and thrift shops, and it's just filled with the shelves. And in the video, I talk about I'm going to take these things, and one day I'm going to make something out of them. I'm just going to wait for that inspiration to strike. And the video is about collecting potential. I got at least 15 comments saying you have ADHD. Because I talk about, like, I start one thing and I'm like, I'm not feeling it. So I move on to the next thing. And, but when you said something about collecting potential, that's one of the things that I think we all do.
100%.
Yeah. And I mean, you can, this is probably not a conversation we need to have, but you could be very prescriptive about diagnosis when you see the way other people do things that are different than the way you do things.
Oh yeah.
I think it's really dangerous. So
yeah, I 100% agree. So I got two of them. I got two comments, and I'm like, I showed Kelly, I'm like, this is funny. And then when I got more than 10 comments saying that, Kelly's like, okay, you don't have to keep showing me every single one. But it was, I don't know. I actually don't know the definition of ADHD. I have a generalization what I think it might be.
I know, and it from watching it on Instagram.
Okay. And
I'm a doctor now.
I don't know exactly what I said in the video to trigger all those comments, but I must have said something or showed something that people who were diagnosed with this were making comments. And and Kelly's like, well, what if you do? I'm like, well, that's just who I am. Maybe in David Lynch's book, he talks about when he was really young, he went to a therapist or a psychologist, and he's like, okay, will these sessions interfere with my creativity in any way? And the therapist was like, it's a possibility. And he's like, thank you, sir. Shook his hand and said, no, not for me. And so if I'm diagnosed with that, if I actually have that, it's part of me. It is who I am. So,
yeah. I probably have a lot to say that I shouldn't say about this. But yeah. Self-diagnosis is dangerous in anything. Not just this. Self-diagnosis, like, if you stop there, then you're setting yourself up with a bunch of presuppositions about what you know, what you think you know about something and how it causes you to be, rather than actual diagnosis where somebody with third-party experience can give you a real third-party view of something and how it can but doesn't have to affect your life. Instagram is full of self-diagnosis. And when you project that self-diagnosis on other people and you're not trained to be able to do that, I think that's really dangerous. Last night, I was kind of coaching a soccer game with one of my kids. I wasn't really coaching. My wife was coaching, and I was standing there. But I was watching this other team play our kids, and this other team was a little mouthy and a little... they're good, but they're a little, like, aggressive and a little, like, cocky and whatever. And I noticed on the field that this other team, when our kids would have the ball and start doing something, some of these other players would yell out, he's going to do this. He always does this. And I realized that it wasn't because they knew each other. They do know each other. But it wasn't that they were saying, I know that he always plays this way. They were trying to influence what he was going to do by telling him that he always did this thing.
That's funny.
And so when we came off the field at halftime, I told the guys, I can hear them telling you what you should do or what you're going to do, but you don't have to listen to them. They're prescribing behavior onto you that you don't have to do. Play your game. Ignore them. And all these kids kind of looked up and they're like, oh, like they didn't realize that these other kids were trying to, you are this way, be this way, because then I'm in control of what you do and how, and they beat us. but that wasn't the point. The point was somebody outside of these kids was telling them how they were going to be before they were. And it, like, I don't know. I don't like that. Anyway.
Hello.
We had a topic.
Yeah.
We had a topic. Jimmy. You both had parts of a topic that were different topics, but kind of the same topic. I don't know. Somebody well, take topic.
Dave, do you want to clearly introduce it? And
yeah. So
I had some thoughts on it.
As I was explaining earlier, there's a gap from what I can do and what I want to do skill-wise. And usually and historically, that gap has motivated me to get better and to learn these things and do all this stuff. Sometimes that gap from where I am and where I want to be gives me the opposite. I'm paralyzed, or it's like I have these negative thoughts of like, I suck. I can't do the thing that I want to do because I don't know how to come up with the ideas to do that. And it's demotivating. And I don't know why sometimes that gap is a good thing and why sometimes that gap is a bad thing. And it just changes within me. And I didn't know if there was a topic there. And then Jimmy added on to it, which I'm going to throw the ball over to your court.
Yeah. Well, there's the couple of gaps. That gap is procrastination, fear of failure. And sometimes in my case, what I was describing is just partly because of the weather, but partly because lately I've been lazy and I've been scrolling a little bit too much. But I'm trying, if I do find myself scrolling, so I call it the gap between I wake up in the morning and then I kill an hour scrolling and then I go, I have to do something. So I go to Harbor Freight and buy a valve compressor and I spend literally hours compressing the valve and getting it out and learning all these things I didn't know from Eric the car guy, by the way. So shout out to Eric the car guy, watching his old videos on how to remove a valve. And so there was a gap there, partly because I was being lazy, partly because it was 1 degree out, partly because of the fear of the unknown. So I got to actually stop myself, put the phone down and say, okay, why am I wasting time? And it's all of the above. It's all of the above. I don't want to drop something in the motor, or then I have to get more involved or maybe abandon. If I drop the bolt in the motor, I'd be like, what am I going to do? So that's just in the back of my mind. And so there's that gap of the unknown, fear of failure, laziness, cold, all of the above. But I make it okay for myself by having these extra bursts of productivity. Like I described earlier in this conversation, how I was kind of having a little bit of a lazy week last week. Thursday morning, I woke up, I was like, I'm going to tackle this door project. But then I remembered I had surgery on my mouth at 10 o'clock. So I woke up at like 8 in the morning. I'm like, I kind of knew going to bed. But when I woke up, I forgot that I had to go to the dentist. I'm having an implant put in over here. So I woke up and I was like, oh, I wanted to get right to work, but I had to go spend till 1 o'clock with the surgeon. And then I came back with like half my face. I had like kind of major surgery. They put in like cadaver bone and all this stuff. And I went right to work. So when you're watching the video of me building that door,
Yeah, puffy face?
Not puffy. It didn't get swollen, but it was all, I was like drooling. I had to like make sure that if I took a sip of coffee, it went in my mouth. And, but I justify these moments of laziness by extra bursts of energy. Does that make sense?
It does.
I feel like I've gotten like what the average person would get done in like 2 days, I get done in a half a day. So I feel like I could literally waste an hour doing completely nothing. And in that hour of doing nothing, I'm either playing with the cats, either scrolling, doing research, maybe paying bills online, which I find is, I feel like I'm wasting time, but obviously I'm not. If I'm not physically carrying, doing, welding, grinding, cutting, sawing, screwing, I feel like that's the gap. I'm not physically, if my skeleton's not in motion, I feel like that's the gap. So anything I'm doing where it's not all those other things, the gap. So I feel like those bursts of energy justify the gap. So I don't have too much of a guilty conscience about the gap.
Let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. What do you think has caused you to see that up and down, that go rest thing as bad or as like something that you have to make an excuse for in your head?
I just always had this, I guess it goes back to my father. And my brother Joey said something really funny. This was maybe a year ago when Rachel really got a chance to meet my brother for the first time around the holiday table. We're sitting there, my brother Joey says, we were talking about my dad. This was actually just before he passed away. It was like the week he died. And we were talking and Joey said, my brother Joseph, he's my oldest brother. He goes, my dad had kids so he'd have free labor. And he was being sarcastic. He goes, yeah, my dad, he needed Oompa Loompas. So he had three boys. He goes, we were like Oompa Loompas. We were always ready to work. We would sleep with our eyes open. That's what Joey said. And we got to rip a fence. My dad and his three Oompa Loompas would rip the fence and move the stuff. And it's funny, Rachel always says it like she calls me an Oompa Loompa now because I'm always working. But that, I think, is my childhood, where if you're idle, you should feel guilty because you need to be moving, cleaning, organizing, bundling up sticks. You know, 50 people sent me that little meme of the kid with the glasses going, yeah, I'm going to just like bundle sticks today. And you ever see that little meme of the kid? It's like this funny farm kid. I got to send it to you guys. Everybody sends it to me because they're like, this is you. This is where it started. It's some kid like kind of like talking to his mom and holding, he has his hands on his hips. He's like a 6-year-old or a 5-year-old and his hands are on his hips like he's really busy and he just stopped to talk. And his mother's going, what are you going to do today, Jimmy? He's like, yeah, I got to bundle up some sticks and I got to go collect some rocks. And he like had this whole list of useless things to do. But to him, it was really important.
Yeah.
And you could tell the kid is going to be very motivated as he gets into his career. And I think that's where the guilt comes from.
I know for me, there are certain days where I have to do non-making stuff, non-video or project making stuff, where you got to pay the bills. I got to ship some stuff. I have to go get supplies. I have to make more finish. I have to do all these things. And it doesn't, in that moment, it doesn't feel like I'm pushing things forward. It feels like I'm pushing things sideways. So instead of going north, I'm going east. And there's a guilt. If I am not pushing a project forward, it just doesn't feel as satisfying. And there's this, I want to be doing something physical.
This is pure conjecture. So this, whatever. I don't know. It feels like our 20s, maybe like our late teens to early 30s, are this unrealistic span where as a kid, you have to have a certain amount of sleep, right? So like to function, you just have to sleep some. And then as you get into your late teens and early 20s, you start being able to function on a lot less sleep. So you get this feeling of like, well, I can stay up and play video games all night. I can use the time in the way that I want to use the time. I am in control of how much of my day I get to actually use productively or intentionally. And then that's when most people, that period of time is when most people hustle. They do their startup. They build some new company. They, you know, the star athletes are in that age range. You're just capable of doing more with less physically and around sleep and stuff. And then you get into your 30s and 40s, and when you're like super ancient like Jimmy, it's harder because you do have to, just kidding. Even though Jimmy is an outlier in this, you have to sleep more. You have to rest. That, like, that daily, I have to sleep, I have to be awake. I have to sleep, I have to be awake. That rest and work cycle is a pretty natural thing for us. But the reason I was asking about this is because I think social media is this thing we all see about the hustle, about people who are building something, a company, a software, a table, whatever. They're building a thing, and we see this constant up-level work because we're only seeing the non-sleep part of their life, right? The non-rest, the non-research, we see the building the thing. And that's what we're confronted with. And so when we compare our, I have to sleep today, and then I have to work, to somebody who seems to not do that, it's like an unfair comparison, like most things on social media. But I think for me, I went through a time, especially while I like to make stuff, was building, where that was the comparison. I need to be building all the time. And that means I need to sacrifice maybe some time with family. I need to sacrifice sleep. I need to sacrifice health. I need to sacrifice all these things to be productive. And so I fell into that trap, even though I was kind of aware of it and tried really hard not to. I fell into that trap of feeling like all of my awake time has to make up for the fact that I had to sleep today.
That's my life. That's the title.
And it's not, I don't think that's good. Like, I get it. I've been there.
I know.
I understand why people feel that way, but I think that is a really,
that's why I never want to go to sleep.
Thing to put on ourselves.
That's why I never want to go to sleep. That's the gap. But now the gap is happening more and more throughout the conscious day. And that's why I have these huge spurts of activity, because I'm like, oh, I just scrolled for 30 minutes. I must put 3 hours into this next 1 hour. Or sometimes at the end of the day, unscheduled, I'll punish myself and run on the Peloton when it's the day off.
I have two thoughts playing off of what Bob just said. The first one is, when I first started the business 11 years ago, 10 years ago, the motivation and the excitement was like way up here. And it didn't matter how much sleep I got because I was so excited. And as things settle down and things start working and you get into a rhythm, that motivation comes down a little bit. So you're not working, you know, 18 hours a day, but there's a guilt attached to that. You're like, I used to be so motivated for this business. And now I'm still motivated, but it's not at the same level. So there's some guilt attached to that. Another thought that I was thinking was, when you're talking about 20s and how we're all ancient now, Bob, you and I watch a channel called Digital Spaghetti. It's Jack from Patreon interviews these filmmakers and who just have a different take on a very artsy take on making YouTube videos. And so many of the people that he has on the show are in their 20s, and it blows my freaking mind and makes me so angry. Is not the word, but it kind of eats at me that these kids in their 20s are making such beautiful films. I've been doing this for 12 years, and I can't, there's a gap between what I'm doing and what they're doing, and I've been doing it since before they knew what a video camera was.
Since they were in diapers.
I know. Yeah. And maybe that's old grumpy man Pachuto yelling at the computer screen, but I'm like, how are they so good at visualization and storytelling?
Because, part of it has a lot to do with, I brought up Orson Welles this morning. I don't know if we talked about him before we started recording. Imagine Orson Welles growing up right now versus... what was it? I mean, he obviously had a little bit more of an advanced understanding of what was going on at the time for him to make Citizen Kane at 20 something years old. But you could imagine when you literally poke your head out of the manhole cover, and like what society's at that very moment. You know, I poked my head out of the manhole cover at 60 in 1967. It was 8mm movie cameras, which were complicated to use and complicated to have access to the final result. And then once you got the final result, you just looked at this reel and you couldn't do anything with it. And versus when I started YouTube, I only used the flip camera, the one where the USB port would plug in. My first 75 videos were made on a flip camera. And then I think I started advancing from you. You gave me the D7100. I bought that from you. And that was my first advance. I knew much more about cameras, but I was trying to make potato chips and do it quick and easy. Versus now, you can basically get really advanced cameras, really quick editing technology, AI. Who knows who's using AI? You know, you just don't know.
Yeah. It is a different set of tools, a different pace at which things are created than even when we started, which, I mean, is relatively not that long ago. But
yeah.
But from a technology perspective, it is a long time ago. The kids who are starting now have a lot of advantage just from the friction of getting started, and that makes it easier for them to get their creative ideas in play. They're not having to fight the creative idea through technology that's, you know, difficult or working against them or whatever. And that's awesome for them.
Yeah. Another thing, and this is another justification for, we'll keep calling it the gap of inactivity, or the gap of fear, or whatever we want to call that. By me scrolling and looking, I have to keep reminding myself to really pay close attention to the interesting tidbits and not just watch a girl using a hula hoop. I want to stop and look at history. I want to stop and look at technology, advancements in. So all those things, you could imagine a young untapped filmmaker comes up, and these are all the things you're being bombarded with constantly. So when you as like the physical embodiment of AI, you take all those things in and then regurgitate them in a film, young artists are being bombarded with so much more inspiration, is the best word to say, than ever before. So it's all being ingested and vomited through all different things, much higher and much more influential than ever before.
Yeah, I think, you know, if we go back to the kind of rest thing as well, or maybe that's not how you said it, but the way I'm thinking of it is this kind of motion and rest.
Inactivity.
Thing. Yeah. I do think that, you know, how do I say this? The accessibility of everything now, of tools, physical tools, digital tools, cameras, everything is accessible, which doesn't necessarily lead you to a natural state of, I have to work. Like with the old 16mm cameras, 8mm cameras, film photography, you work and then you rest. And during that rest, somebody else is working because they are processing your film. They are printing your pictures. They are doing the thing. And so there is that creation. There was this natural sort of like work and then wait and then work and then wait. But now we can film a video of us building a thing and put that video online immediately. We can live stream that thing. We can get that work to the consumer in real time, which doesn't really get, I mean, it doesn't naturally give you the work rest kind of pattern. You have to build that into it. And I think you know, you're talking about feeling guilty. I think that's just because we're trying to keep up. Now, whether we mean to or not, we're naturally trying to provide for what we feel like we have to provide for. When I had a team of people a couple of years ago, we had a building, which for the people asking, I sold the building a while back. I had a team of people. I had a bunch of salaries to pay, a ridiculous monthly amount of money that I was responsible for to people that I cared about and was responsible for. And that stress, or that, not even, the stress was downstream from requirement. I set myself up to have a requirement, which meant that any time that I was not working, that I was not trying to be productive, not trying to push the ball forward, I was letting or potentially letting those people down.
Yeah, that's how I feel about myself and everything around me.
And simplifying that all, removing all of that weight from me, has allowed me to figure out how to rest again. How to have mornings where I don't necessarily feel bad about scrolling, about reading comic books. This is so weird that I do this now, that I will sit on the couch with a cup of coffee. I get up before the kids leave so I can say bye to them. They leave, and then the house is quiet for a little while. I do some reading. I do a workout. And recently, I've been sitting down and reading comic books. Not because I need to. Not because it does anything for me other than I enjoy them. And I'm training myself to not feel bad about resting, about taking a little bit of time and enjoying it. Because I know that as soon as I come down here, I'm full steam ahead until dinner time and I've got work hours. And also trying to train myself that if I decide in the middle of the work hours that I want to go kayak, which I've been trying, I mean, I'm doing that on purpose so that I don't feel bad about it. Like, I think having that work rest rhythm is part of how we're supposed to be. And when we fight against that for too long.
Yeah. I'm not feeling guilty about it, by the way, that much anymore.
I mean, I have felt how not doing the rest cycle has stressed me out to the point past any stress I've ever had in my entire life. I felt that. And now I'm on the other side of that. So I'm just saying that to encourage people who are not allowing themselves to have some downtime for the sake of being more productive. Like, that is a good thing to do. And not every situation is going to allow for it. And sometimes you have requirements, mortgage, kids, things that you can't get rid of. You know, you can't, like, I'm just going to set those aside so I can read comic books. I get that. But I think working towards allowing yourself to be able to have downtime allows you to actually be more productive. Okay. Thanks for coming to my TED Talk. What you got, David?
I just had a realization. I will never fix myself. I think my brain has two tanks. One is 75% positivity, and the other is 25% negativity. And I spend so much of my energy on removing friction and making my shop easy to work in. Every tool has its place in my office. Everything is somewhat organized so I can quickly do the thing, or I have all these tools. And when I remove a piece of friction, that 70-25, it might go to, or 75-25, it might move up to 80-20. But there's this, I just find something else to be negative about. So then that 20% negativity goes up to 25. It just, all I'm doing is just moving friction. I'm removing friction here, adding friction over here, because I have a new thing. I have room in my friction tank to worry about something new. I will never fix myself.
Do you think that added friction, that shift there, do you think that is maybe on purpose so that you have a problem to solve?
Probably.
You have a thing to improve?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it is. Yeah. I think not all friction is bad. There's, you know, you're moving forward. You're giving yourself something to do. I haven't watched the meme Jimmy sent, but I got a pretty good idea of what it's going to say. And, you know, tomorrow I'm going to have a new bundle of sticks that I'm going to need to collect.
That's basically, it's like, yeah, I got to pick up sticks and got to go cut rocks. And
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Jimmy, I would encourage you to not, I know you spend time scrolling and you have that cycle of like not productive, but be productive. And I know in general, you are a very productive person. But I would encourage you not to feel bad about that, because I think that process is part of, you know, I think it's part of who you are.
That's what I justify. Like I said, I'm not watching the girls in the bikini with the hula hoop. I'm watching history, tech and design. I'm trying to, and we see these commercials now. It's like, are you scrolling? How about scrolling just history bits and pieces? And,
yeah.
You know, there's new apps and stuff. And, it's like you could take Ozempic or you could just not eat. You could download that app or you could just choose to watch fruitful stuff. And that's,
Oh, what am
but
I?
But at the same time, hang on. But at the same time, not to advocate for comic books because they're just comic books. But what they represent is like creative enjoyment. You're enjoying somebody else's art for the sake of somebody else creating art. And I think that is a perfectly valid, just as valid as learning history, as reading books and self-improvement and stuff. I think that is an option for people.
Yeah, and my version of that, and Dave, you might identify with this, is like the unbelievable culmination of so many good, talented, comedic artists that have their own Instagram now. Where like they would never even want a TV show because they're so successful at their own creating their own comedy. So I do stop on a lot of comedians doing skits and so many funny, talented people that would never ever have been discovered otherwise that are hilarious. And that's my version of, say, for instance, like watching comic books, because I seek out like Laura Ramoso and Laura Clary, and a couple of girls that I watch, and a few guys that are just so funny. And they would never, ever have been put up 10 years ago. Hmm. You know, they might have gotten a bit part on a comedy show or something, but their true talent wouldn't have been realized for years. And now they're just literally hitting the small screen with, if it don't work, they delete it. If it works, it's funny. You know, there's no, the pressure stakes aren't high, and you're getting like really raw, unbelievably funny content that we otherwise never would have been able to see if it wasn't for what was going on.
My version of reading comic books is tutorial websites. I've convinced myself, and like I'm subscribed to like masterclass.com, Domestika, used to be Lynda, now it's like LinkedIn Learning, and I like have all these way too much in tutorial sites and way too much books, and I've convinced myself that this is entertainment, but I'm also learning something. I'm pushing myself forward, but I'm not really learning those skills. You're not learning a skill by watching somebody else do it. You might pick up on what they're doing, but unless you actually do it.
But it's the beginning. It's the beginning of the ambition.
So
I've gone on this
rabbit hole of I got this collection of Wes Anderson books. And each book is about a different movie and the history of the movie and the visuals and how they got there. And so I'm going through and I'm reading about the Grand Budapest Hotel. Amazing. These are amazing books, by the way, and the visuals in there are so good that I've watched the Grand Budapest Hotel 3 nights in a row. Not for entertainment, because I'm studying it. And I'm like, when did I stop watching stuff for entertainment? I feel like I have to, I feel like I have to get something out of everything that I'm watching or doing.
Well,
I don't know that that's a bad thing. I mean,
it's not a bad thing, but I don't need to watch the Grand Budapest Hotel 3 nights in a row.
Well, yeah, maybe vary it a little
bit. It's a really, really good movie though.
I haven't seen that one.
Oh.
All right. Any other thoughts on this? On
I mean,
rest,
I have all
gap?
Kinds of thoughts. I don't know if you guys have all day.
I mean, yeah.
I got to go
me
pick
from
up
working
sticks.
If I do this. No,
I got a lot of sticks to pick up in the snow.
Cool. Well, you can write them down, other thoughts, and we'll do it next week. Or we can talk about all the sticks that Jimmy picked up next week. I want to thank our Patreon supporters because they are awesome. And we actually have a new supporter this week. It's Ryan at A Pretty Big Deal, Inc. I have not looked up Ryan's website, but I'm curious because that's a pretty great name for a company. So,
Ryan,
as well as Matthias Garnell, Grabshoot Creative, Michael Menegin, Warren Works, Jeff at the New Janky Workshop, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, Sean Beckner, Odin Leather Goods, Rich at Low End Design, Chad from Mancrafting, Works by Solo, Albers Woodworks, Corey Ward, and Nick Ryan. Those are our top supporters.
Thank you all.
They go above and beyond. Welcome Ryan to that group. But there's a bunch of other people like Bill Burkle, who supports us. Burkle. He's also in the show notes because there's a whole group of people that are in the show notes. There's a bunch of people who support us that never get mentioned, but they all get the after show, and we are grateful to every single one of them for supporting us being able to talk about this stuff and, you know, spend time together every week. So thank you to everybody that supports us at Patreon. And if you want to get that, join that group and get the after show, you can go to patreon.com/makingit. Join up at any level, and the after show podcast will be linked in Patreon. You can get that URL and put it in your podcast player. There's also going to be links there for watching the main show and the after show on YouTube. They're both available. So go over and join that. But if you don't join the Patreon, still want to say thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Thanks for the notes and for the messages we get from everybody. We are very grateful
to
be doing this for a really long time.
Like 14 years now, 15 years?
I think we're at 35 years. Last time I checked.
It's incredible.
Like yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah,
like when we started, we had like 5 videos each. It's like there was really enough people to pay attention in the beginning.
I don't think anybody ever listened to the first like 200 episodes.
Somebody listened to the first 100 because we had a
day. Yeah.
So somebody commented on a really my old stool video. So I made a stool. Jimmy's told the story a bunch of times. I made a stool. Jimmy made a stool shortly after. It was similar to mine. Yeah. And it was just, it was a coincidence. And so Jimmy commented on my video. This video is like 12 years old or whatever. And then somebody replied to Jimmy's comment on there, which made me remember. And so I screenshotted Jimmy's comment to me from 10 years ago. I'm like, this was our first interaction.
Yeah,
and I was
yeah,
like,
yeah.
And then I went back. I'm like, what's my first interaction with Bob? It was through an email. And I tried to find the oldest email that we had. And our first conversations were about CNCs and highlighting Bob's channel on my old weekly woodworking wrap-up review show. So
yes, that was a huge thing for me. That was a big deal.
Same with me. I was so excited when you first talked about me on that. But when we all got together for the first time and you guys were talking CNCs and lasers, I was like, I feel like I had two astrophysicists and I was like the guy that picked up sticks.
Everything I learned from Bob.
Yeah.
You guys were talking CNCs. I was like, yeah, we're going to need more nose.
It's funny because now he's in a CNC.
Yeah, now I would have to ask you guys how to use it again. I haven't. It's been so long.
It's like you should see the stick I found yesterday.
Well, you guys have anything to recommend this week?
I do. I said Eric the Car Guy, so thank you to Eric the Car Guy. We actually used to be friends. I haven't talked to him in years. And have you guys seen Van Neistat's video about escaping the LA wildfires? Yeah, it's pretty intense. I sent it to some friends. I mean, I've been watching Van stuff. I like Van stuff. And then I mentioned before we got on, I don't know if we talked about it on camera or not, Future Shock, which is this crazy movie that was suggested to me this morning about how fast things are changing and how the world is getting so fast and almost like this, almost in a tragic way. It's an interesting movie because if the guys who made that movie only knew that the internet was just 25 years away.
Yeah, this was in 1972 is when the movie was made.
Yep. Yeah, Future Shock with the cool logo. The best thing about it is it's being narrated by Orson Welles. And they talk about test tube babies and how the world, and there's so many choices of automobiles and this whole segment about how you could choose which color skin you're going to want in the future. It's crazy.
Whoa.
It almost seems like it was made around the same time as Kentucky Fried Movie, where they make fun of these type of things.
I remember Kentucky Fried Movie, yeah.
And so this whole movie looks like you're waiting for the punchline, but it's not. It's crazy. It's on YouTube. I found it.
It's funny because you said something before we started recording about how at that time Orson Welles would what did you say he was?
He would do anything for work because he was
like selling sandwiches. I can't remember how you said it. It was really funny.
Oh, yeah, I said.
But in
the, work for a sandwich, I might have said
the middle '80s, in '84, I guess '86. He was the voice of a Transformer in the Transformers movie that was in theaters, and I remember even at the time as a kid being like, Orson Welles is a
he's alive.
Well. Well, no, because I remembered the name Orson Welles from, you know, I was young at that time, but I remembered because my grandmother had listened to War of the Worlds when it was live on the radio. And I remember the story from my mom talking about how, you know, my grandmother had heard this and freaked out and all this stuff. And So that was my picture of Orson Welles. Like, he was the super old guy that did radio, like, way back when my grandmother was a kid or whatever. Yeah. And I don't even know what year that was in.
Yeah.
But I remember when that Transformers movie came out, which I was super into. I was like, Orson Welles? And then
I watched
this movie recently with my kids, and what an amazing voice. Yeah. Like, it's an amazing voice in general, but the character that he plays is this really deep, like, he's a planet that eats other planets. This is crazy scenario and just really menacing voice. But anyway.
And then my introduction to Orson Welles, I never knew who he was, obviously, as a young child, watching Second City, and John Candy would imitate him, being rude and obnoxious to the microphone controllers, because there's all these old classic clips of him doing voiceovers and losing his temper. And that was my first, I was like, who is, like, obviously it's funny. I would laugh at just the comedy of it, but I had no context of why John Candy from time to time would be this big fat guy and dressed in black being rude and with this booming voice. And then I learned in time.
Cool. What you got, David?
This week I'm going with the documentary, The Art Life. It's a documentary about David Lynch, one of my all time favorite artists. And I'm not even, it's not even like I enjoy his films, but I don't understand his films. Nearly all of his films are mind bending. But a few years ago, I watched his masterclass just to have something on in the background. And I was like, oh my goodness, this guy is so interesting. So then I watched the documentary, The Art Life, and then I ended up reading the book, Catching the Big Fish. And I just became really, really obsessed with him over the last couple of years. And he passed away a few days ago. And even if you don't like or don't understand his films, his philosophy on life, his philosophy on art,
there's been lots of good clips coming up.
Just amazing. And I don't know. He did this book. He did this documentary. He did all these talks over the last 10 years, and they're all on YouTube, and they're all just fantastic. I don't know if he got to a point where it's like, okay, I'm getting older, I need to share all this information, because he just spilled out all of this information about, his life and art, and extremely inspiring to me. And I don't normally have feelings on a celebrity death. Usually it's just like, oh, that's sad, the world lost a great artist. This goes back to, I had the same feelings of when Kurt Cobain died, and I was like a huge Nirvana fan. Like, man, how can somebody I don't know affect me so much, their death? And so my pick is The Art Life by David Lynch. It's on HBO. You can find it elsewhere if you just do some searches, but it's on HBO to watch legitimately. Funny thing is, back in early December, I reached out to his assistant to interview him on my channel. And I don't interview people on my channel. It's just not something I've ever done. It's not something I ever thought about. But he's had such an impact on me over the last year. And it's one of the huge reasons I changed from making videos for the algorithm to making videos that I wanted to make. And so I reached out, and I got the politest rejection letter. I'm going to share that in an upcoming video here soon. Basically, the rejection letter was, he's focusing on his own work. He's not doing any talks or interviews now. And then a month and a half later, he passed away. I don't know. Mm. Just somebody who, it feels like I just discovered him. It feels like I just got to know him. And then here we are. But luckily, there's so many talks and so many documentaries and books. And this is also an audio book. He reads the audio book. It's so good. It's so good.
Cool.
Well, mine is an artist that I really respect too. I tried. I couldn't do it. do you guys remember Flula Borg?
No.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so Flula is this, I think he's from Germany, I assume. And he was a DJ.
Yeah, I know. He's a really funny guy. He's hilarious.
Yeah, he's so funny.
Yeah, I didn't realize
and he's been making YouTube videos for a really long time. And the first several videos were him in the States talking about, it's like him in his car at 7 o'clock in the morning with the seat laid back, and he's like talking to his phone, and he's talking about these idioms from the English language that he doesn't understand. The one I'm going to link is party. It's called Party Pooper, and it's him trying to understand what the idiom Party Pooper means, and why somebody would poop at parties. And it is so funny, and I'd forgotten.
Another
how
really
hilarious.
Good one is a little too risky to say here, but when he talks about two men fighting in the street and what they yell at each other.
I haven't seen that one. There are several of them. It is
unbelievably funny.
They are so hilarious. And so now he's doing different stuff, and he's done a bunch of different things over the years. But one of my kids recently found this Party Pooper one, and then we started watching a whole bunch of them, and like, man, it's so good.
He was on Curb Your Enthusiasm as the weird cousin's wife. Like, and him trying to relate to Larry David is one of the best scenes, one of the best episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm. Nice. They play like he's like a swinging couple that ends up having to stay at Larry's house as a guest to like a second party.
Okay.
Funny.
He's very funny, especially I haven't watched any of the new videos. He does music with famous people and stuff, but these old ones where he's just, you know, sounds like he's trying to understand this English thing is really.
He got
really
some
good,
movie so. Part and he got super jacked. Did you happen to notice that?
No.
He got some movie part in some like action film and he got super jacked, and he talks about gaining muscle in one of these clips I've seen from a few years ago. And he went from being just like average to jacked for a movie, and he talks about that. I happen to notice that.
I have not seen that. Yeah. Cool. Well, you guys got anything else for this week?
No.
That's it. Anything?
All right, cool. Thanks for listening, everybody. And, catch you next time.
Love you.
Love you.